Good morning, this is Rob. Who's on, please?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. Good. Who's speaking?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
We're in Easton, Pennsylvania.
My complex assistant manager is here today, too, Isaiah Williams. So he's here with us on.
How you doing, Rob?
Good, good. How are you?
Doing well.
All right. So what's on your mind this morning?
Week two.
Yeah, we went through and started segmenting the book and figuring out our minimum and maximum. And, just waiting for some more information on what the folders would look like, because when we introduce this, we want to be ready to introduce it, and not have everything in place.
I think the complex is actually ordering the folders.
Okay.
So we don't have to purchase them.
Okay.
So we're still working, Rob. We're trying to we segmented our books. We kind of have that all broken out to our top clients, everyone that's really looking at doing the program. We've had a lot of positive input. We're looking to position someone in a position below us to become an advisor. But we're talking to current staff members, and we're trying to see how we can position our team to be more active, because I think the biggest weakness is the clients are threats, or you're not serving the clients enough that you'll lose them. So if we put people in positions to be that extra touch, that extra contact, that'll help, grow the book and help them grow their, grow the client base as well. So that's what we're trying to do, is we're searching to see how we can get someone in that spot. And that's why I have Isaiah here today, because hopefully he's going to give me some input on what we can do.
Okay. All right. And it's tremendously helpful if we have a manager on the calls, because there are times that we run into issues that you guys think are insurmountable or will take you literally weeks and weeks to get over, that a manager can step in and say, I can take care of that, or I can at least expedite that. So thank you, Isaiah, for being here.
Well, you got it. Thank you.
It's a big help. It's one of the reasons you guys have done so well with these coaching calls, is that your managers are on the calls more than any other firm that I work with. So thank you. Okay, so this is the week two, and we're focused on making sure that we understand that we have a minimum and we have a maximum number of clients that we're going to work with. And in far as our minimums, we set up two minimums so that we don't violate our minimum. So we consider it an absolute minimum and then a target minimum. So what is your absolute minimum? What is your target minimum?
For Rob, Godown, and Chris Wilson, we set off of our current book, our ideal client is, over $1 million. Our target would be 700, and our absolute minimum at current pace would be 350,000. And we did that based off of our current book metrics.
Okay, so you did the math, right? Exactly?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So the math is 350,000 absolute minimum, target minimum 700, did you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay, does that apply to the entire group that's listening?
No.
No, that's one of the teams. The other team would be Mike and his gang.
Mike? Yeah, is our target would be someone in the top 20, which would probably be around 3.5 million,
Yep.
And then where we would, bring them in, I think, because I have I have a daughter that's in my on my team now. It's been with us for like 3 years, 4 years. This is her fourth year. And I have a son that passed the test this summer that's in his senior year of college. Mm-hmm. So he's going to go for his master's and then come out. So I'm trying to look at building a book where we can all be positioned with a certain amount of clients. But the problem, as we talked about before, we have 1,000 households. But if we take that top 50, we take the top 20%, that's about 80% of our book. That's 80% of our revenue, the top 20% of our clients. So
okay.
If we go into that, the absolute minimum would be like say 750, and our you know our target is basically 3 million. I'm looking at 3.5 to 3 million, somewhere in that range. You know, but when you come in, you know, would you take that minimum? Yes, but I think right now we're trying to position one of our assistants in a role to come into the FA program, and if you could help me help them. Because their biggest fear is losing the salary that they have and the stability of knowing they have a job and trying to transition into the FA program and thinking that they're going to have to go out there and hunt assets. And I can't communicate it to them why it's a great opportunity. One of our managers in the office has given me, you know, we joke about it, but I'm just trying to see if you could help me to help them understand how it would work, how they would get accounts pushed down to them in the environment, because I'm looking at not only myself, but I'm looking at Rob and Chris and saying their accounts that they're pushing out have to go somewhere too. Right. And it would create, you know, there's a minimum that we get paid on, which is 250, but if you're
right.
between 100 and 250 and you get a GPS plan, you still get paid. That's grandfathered. And even now, if it's not an advisor, you still get paid at the higher level if you do a plan. So you
and liabilities count next year.
And liabilities count. That means like, you know, loans and all the other stuff. So you're going to get paid on those accounts, which they think they're pushing out. There'll be enough accounts for you to manage. And what we looked at is like giving them $300,000 of revenue. They're getting a salary based on all their pay and bonuses. And then they're going to get, I think, 25% of the payout on the book for the first year, then 50, then 80, and then we can kind of scale it up from then. But their comfort level is they think after the third year in the, you know, being in this, that they're going to be left penniless and they won't have anything and they won't have a job. And I just, yeah,
that's
I know.
Strange. Okay. So you've got kind of the ideal situation here.
I know, I do, but they can't see the forest for the trees. So I was thinking about jumping off the free bridge into the river, but it's cold right now, so I'm thinking about waiting on that.
Yeah. Make sure everybody reads the books, right? I mean, you got to know the business and you got to know how it works. In reality, you know, you guys probably were handed a phone book, and so was I.
Right.
So, I mean, whatever we're doing here is like manna from heaven. So we'll talk about that. But let me just make sure I'm clear here. So it seems to me you've got, you know, did you guys read about the stair steps to the stars?
I read the multiplier book as well. I think Rob read all three. I'm not.
Yeah.
So I read your
steps, yeah. This concept is the stair step to the stars. And what we always hope to have is a team right below your team that can take your clients that you are no longer serving, but they've received Supernova service.
Right.
So, you know, this is like you guys working together. It's like magic, right? It's like,
yeah.
Hey, as soon as
one other thing, Rob, yeah. What we did is we had an assistant that basically spent her day every time we had a project going or a campaign. She would go and she would make calls to clients, maybe 10 to 15 a day, to talk whether it was setting up estate planning with transfer on death, reviewing their beneficiaries, you know, and doing the other steps that you have in your book. We've done that for years, but we've done that with a non-licensed assistant. my the license sales assistants, which have grown and, you know, gotten all their licenses and their series. I think you have your 66 too, do you know? They have their 66. They have all their licenses, and they're making a good salary. But I'm trying to position them in because I think they know the clients. The clients are comfortable with them.
Sure.
And if we can position them in, you know, and as everybody continues to grow in the business, they're just going to step up and they'll be, you know, wanted like a be growing their book over time as well. And they're young enough, like we're a little bit, I'm older, I'm 55, and Rob and Chris, I think, are close to 50. You're younger,
46.
Right? Yeah, 46. Rob's what, 50? Yeah. Rob's 50. And then but the other ladies are younger, so I'm trying to look for that, you know, protecting the assets with my daughter and my son and the next generation of people that'll be here to take over when we're gone. And
sure.
But I don't know.
I think you've done a great job. This is a great job. You've done a great job here, and you guys working together is perfect. Because, you know, you got, you know, you when you get a client that is, let's say you get a client that's got $700,000 of business, you just turn it right over to Rob, right? He takes it.
Rob's on a different team. See, there's two teams here. There's a team of two.
I know. That's my point. You're not going to take something that's $700,000.
You're not going to take it. Like the Green Bay Packers.
Right. So you're not going to take it because it's 700. Your minimum is $750,000 now. So you're not going to take a $700,000 client. But
I could give that
Rob,
to my daughter who's on our team.
Don't think about that. You got plenty of accounts.
Okay.
You're not going to take anything below $750,000 no matter what.
That's a good concept.
Under no circumstances. That's your absolute minimum.
And then if I had the assistants were in and they were working.
No, you want to give that to your other team here. Their minimum is absolute minimum is $300,000. They're looking for $700,000 clients. So you hand them to them.
Brokers, Rob. What if I bring in two new brokers underneath us that we're pushing those accounts to from my... Like, that's what we're trying to do is take the sales assistant.
No, you don't want any more clients. You got plenty of clients.
I want other brokers.
If we were to hire another FA, Rob, and, you know, Mike and his team were to push some accounts to that FAA, Rob and Chris were to push their minimums or below their minimums to an FAA, they'd have the ability to work a large swath of relationships, call it between 250 and 700.
Yeah, that's not your problem, guys. Okay, you got to concentrate on your practice as it is today.
That's why I'm trying to get push those accounts down to these new people. That's my goal. I'm trying to use your program, keep the top accounts, and then push the rest of the book to new brokers that I bring in under us that know the clients. I don't know if you're following me.
No, I get it. I just don't want. I don't know why you want to. Are these new brokers?
Rob and Chris have their 200 clients already.
Who are these new brokers?
They're two assistants that are licensed that I was speaking to you on that we want to bring into the FA program.
But you don't want to have lower minimums for anybody.
No, they're not going to be. But they're going to have to start somewhere as a trainee.
No, they're going to start. They're going to start with your clients. Above $750,000. You're not going to bring
that's
in
why I
any
have my
more.
Daughter. You're missing it. I have my daughter in that book. You understand? I'm at the top level. Then I have my daughter with the next 100 clients, 100 households. And then I have 800 more households. Okay?
Right.
So I'm trying to get people in position that I could give those households to them. Okay? And Rob and Chris. To be pushing down
so as an entree into the business, Rob, instead of having a brand new FA sitting in front of the
750. Hey, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. That's your existing business. I'm talking about new accounts.
Yeah, well, new accounts, we know we got that. We're good with
that.
Or if we figured that out, we're good with all that. We know what we're looking for there, but we just want a place to put the other assets because we only have a 6-man shop and we have no
one
to push them to.
Right. I'm good with that. I'm just talking new assets. Okay, you can do anything you want with your old assets. You just don't want them to be in your. You want to have a practice for you in each individual that's less than 100. Okay? So you can give supernova service. How many FAs you have is up to you. You can have 1,000.
Okay.
Okay? I don't care. I mean, I just don't want you to, you don't want to have two minimums, though. From this point on, you have one minimum for your team, for your whole team, okay? So your minimum, absolute minimum, is 750,000, and your target minimum is 3 million. Now, if you have something else, it's just too confusing, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows you have no minimum then. And remember, we determine our brand isn't determined by our best client, but our worst client.
Correct.
Okay, so we want to give supernova service to everybody so that the town thinks you are a hero because you give great service to everybody. And if you don't, if they're not in your practice, then they can get whatever service they want. But the reality is if they're in your practice, they get supernova service.
Got it.
Okay. Okay. So, anyway, so that's we're not on different pages. I just wanted to make sure you understood that.
Yeah,
really,
I just tried to, what I'm trying
so you
to
can
do
send them, yeah, you can send them to, you can send them to the client services department. You can send them to your friends, your neighbors. You know, you can send them anywhere. You can send them to your kids. I don't care, just as long as they're not in your practice.
Got it.
Meaning they're not in your practice, your 100 or your 90 clients. All right, so each individual has a maximum, including your kids. Whoever is a part of your team, no one has more than 100 clients. No one. Okay, so there's not a catch-all that has 500 clients, because then you can't do supernova. Everybody on the same page there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. So now you've got to figure out when you're going to do what. Okay. Creating your ideal client. That's part of our search here, is we're trying to identify who is our ideal client. So we have 11 different screens to do that, but we've come up with a simple asset number, which makes it easy for us to talk about. But what we're really looking for is in the future, who's our ideal client? So he's, now keep in mind, we don't talk about the 750 as our minimum. We talk about 3 million, okay? So the 750 doesn't exist except within our own team. So when we go into the community, our minimum is 3 million. We make an exception to take a 2 million because they're friends and family or somebody that we like, but our target is 3 million. Now, what does that $3 million client look like? So what we're looking for is there a profile of this particular client that we have? Meaning there's more than one of these ideal clients. So what we do is go through our practice and look at that top 20%. And we do forensic analysis of our book to determine where they came from, what they have in common. And then there is a possibility then that we could duplicate them based on the fact that they all belong to the same golf club. They all belong to the same religious association. They might belong to the same university. They might all be doctors. They might belong to the same corporation. So that's what I need you to do, is do that forensic analysis of where these people came from and what they might have in common. So what we're looking for is our niches. And it's amazing that You'll be very good at one of these niches, but you may not even be aware that you're good at it. That's called unconsciously competent. And what we want to do is help you to become consciously competent, that you really are really good at bringing in this kind of client, and therefore our probabilities go way up because you're an expert at it, that we can bring in more than what you have now. And then we look for centers of influence inside each niche. We also look for centers of influence that are just randomly within our book. And then we look for professional centers of influence. Those are CPAs and attorneys and estate planning attorneys and commercial realtors and residential realtors. These are professional professional centers of influence. And we say they're professional because they are in an ideal position to introduce them to our clients and us to their clients. So it's a professional line. The third thing we need to do is make sure we are identifying our ideal day. What does our day look like? If we could reorganize our life and create our perfect day, when would we talk to clients? When would we talk to prospects? When would we have lunch? When would we work out? When would we do whatever we do? Then we look at the ideal day, week, month, year. Now, we have to consider our other teammates. So keeping in mind, we probably doesn't make sense for everybody on the team to go on vacation in the same week. So, you know, how do we organize our year so that we have professionals in the office at all times, making sure that the clients feel like, you know, I always say teams never go to lunch. They never go on vacation. They're always there. And that's what you want the clients to feel like. And they never retire. You know, that's the other thing. There's always somebody there, and that gives clients comfort. There's always somebody on watch, making sure that everything is taken care of. So, questions on that, or have you done that, or where are you on that? Those three questions.
We've looked and identified some outside centers of influence that we're going to meet with that we currently have.
Okay.
That's really about as far as we got. We didn't dig into the book and look for internal centers of influence yet, but we will do that.
Okay. How many centers of influence did you identify, Rob?
We identified five between the two of us that we want to introduce us to.
And are they existing, and do they send you business today?
Existing, yes. Sporadic sending of business.
Okay.
We send more to them than they send to us, unfortunately, at this point.
Well, that may be always the case, but we want to build more of a professional relationship with them, and we'll show you how to do that. And the multiplier goes into that in great detail on how to do that. So it's really fun.
Rob, on that instance, we have a thing where we looked at, like we have a CPA that I dealt with, and the one CPA had passed away, and the gentleman with him, his partner, took over. We refer a lot of business to him, and we referred a lot of business to different attorneys. And in the book, it talks about having the, you know, the big estate planning attorney and the gentleman who's the go-to guy in the area. And in many times, a lot of our clientele, because of the asset base they have, they're not the super wealthy. We're not in town. So we're talking, our sweet spot might be a, you know, a $3 to $10 million market, 1 to 10, where we have an abundance of clients. So many times we're meeting with them with, you know, doing some planning, you know, estate planning and telling them where to look at, and you know, I'm delivering them to the CPA, and it's the same thing as Chris was saying to you, that he gives me a list of people that I sent to him, but I feel comfortable knowing that they're going to get everything done right. I try to make sure that they get it done right, it's done effectively,
sure.
And the guy's very reachable. And the same way with attorneys, a lot of attorneys in our state have a role that they charge percentage. So the difference on the estate planning side is we try to say to them, don't go to the attorney first, come to us first. And they
right.
We basically are the first, where we come in, we have TODs and beneficiaries, and we try to do the estate planning for them, because they're in that sweet spot where if they go to the attorney, these people are like the millionaires next door. We're not like a lot of, there's no big corporations in our area with all a bunch of heavy executives. It just doesn't work that way.
Yep.
So we're looking at the guys who had their business and they made it. You know, they might have worked, you know, on, you know, some type of, you know, maybe they were a builder or a small company business, and we're trying to get the generation passing. So we're trying to do the stuff that we feel delivers more service to them with their estate plan, and then direct them to the attorney that's going to charge them hourly instead of charging $50,000 because he's happy that people don't know what to do when someone dies. And so we kind of look at our brand that way, as, you know, being the everything for them. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to look at, using these other people. And I've identified other CPA firms, but if we send one of our clients to that CPA firm and they're just a person with their tax return, with their assets with us, and they go in there, they might charge them three times as much as the CPAs that we're using, and they're not going to like that. So I got to try to balance that. I understand what that they're offering, but I also know when they go to those firms, they're also offering investment advice as well. So they have investment people in there, and they're like kind of double dipping. So it's not like we can grab that one person that's, you know, the best, but he's also not going to lead them to their own people type of situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, never refer, you know that. I mean, you don't want to refer somebody to a competitor. So,
right.
So I think everything you said is very logical. We just want to build those relationships and teach those people how to unearth opportunities, which, frankly, they just have never been taught. They're not very good at marketing, and they're not particularly good at unearthing opportunities within their own book or their own community. So we'll show you how to do that. But, no, I understand, you know, looking out for your clients. You want to make sure you're not, you know, doing too much. But, you know, with the proper planning, when you said they charge them a percentage, that's typically when they haven't done estate planning, right?
No, and basically, no, what they do is they have in Pennsylvania, there's a scale from 7% to 1% of assets, like on charging on an estate. And it starts at the first $25,000, and it goes to the next, you know, 75 is 6.5, and it goes to like 2% at $1 million. And so when a client passes away and their kids go to an attorney, they say, don't worry, I'll handle it. I'll handle everything. If people don't know what they're doing, I've never done this, what do I do? Don't worry,
right.
I'll handle it. Bring all your statements to me. We already have TODs on the accounts, but the attorneys, and that means a transfer on death, it avoids probate, it avoids the attorney fees, right? But the attorneys actually say on there that they have the right to charge on non-probate assets. The guidelines allow it. So these people are so naive that unless we educate them beforehand and I actually show them the letters that they're going to see when someone dies from previous clients to say,
wow,
this is what you don't want to have happen to you. So we're talking about, you know, going to that big estate attorney, and we've had it. The client has $2 million, $2 million, and they're charging them $45,000-$50,000. And I have to call the attorney and tell him, listen, we're not paying that. We're going to another attorney unless you charge us hourly. And knowing that we already have the assets going all to the beneficiaries to avoid probate, but they would still try to grab them because they're scumbags. And that's the way I feel about most of them. I know there's good ones out there, but I try to protect my clients from the grab.
You guys should work on that legislation.
I don't have time.
I know, but that sounds like an industry issue.
Well, it's just in Pennsylvania.
That's what I mean. There are some stupid laws in Boston, too, that have been on the books forever. And you know,
you didn't answer that question, what I should do with those. How should
work. Anyway, so you just do what you've done. You know how to handle you know, your experience is correct. You don't, you know, avoid those guys and train your clients, because you've already done the, you know, if you've done the estate planning and the proper titling and everything's in trust, then there should be no.
You don't even need trust. You don't even need trust here. You just need transfer on death to who it's going to. You don't. The trust would be good if you were protecting a larger estate, but most of these clients don't have $22 million. You know.
Right. Right.
So they can pass it on to their spouses or their kids, and all they're paying is state inheritance tax at 4.5%.
Okay, well we will talk about, you know, some ideas there as we go. So we've identified, how about our ideal day? You guys have any idea how you want to run your days? When you want to have office hours? To call clients? When you want to, you know, do different things? Have you thought about that, or is this the first time?
No, we talked about having like our calls in the morning, and I think we could do, I'm just looking at it for myself, maybe have calls from like 9 till 10, have an appointment, or till 9 till 10:30, instead of doing that 10 o'clock appointment, maybe do a 10:30 appointment. And then in the afternoon, like we try to have 2 appointments a day, you know, generally, and then we're calling the rest of the time. But the biggest issue we have is the urgent, non-important calls. It's something that, by having a slew of clients, we're always anxious. It's urgent to the client, but it's really not. And depending on what assistant gets it, and if somebody else is tied up, it kind of ends up on my desk when it could be answered without getting to me. And, you know, then I could keep myself on the calls that are more like raising money, investing the money, that type of thing. So that's what I'm trying to empower the staff and my team to be able to make a lot of decisions without coming to me. And then I think in the afternoon, you maybe do calls until maybe 2:30, and then do another meeting at 2:30 to 3:30 type of thing if you wanted to do that. But it's a matter of making those calls. You're still going to have to see people in person, but I figure on average it's maybe 1 to 2 people a day. That's what we run now, and that's like every day. Sometimes it's 3, 4, and 5, but because you just get jammed in around a holiday or something. But I think ideally I'm going to have structure.
Yeah, it sounds like you're running a very effective and a very efficient business now. You just have too many clients. So just visualize 100 clients with no one ever calling. Never. No one will call. Because they don't call because they know you're going to call them. Now, for the sake of this, this call where we have lots of people and we got to have plan, process, and rituals, because we're not just dealing with you, Mike. We got to have a system, okay, that everybody can adhere to and everybody understands. So what we have is, and we did this, we tried doing it with half-hour calls, and it doesn't work because what we do is we give each person a permanent time. Okay, so let's say you and I, Mike, agree that you're going to call me on Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's also the time that I prefer to come in to see you, 9 o'clock on Tuesday. So that's our good time for personal visits and phone calls. Just a good time for us. So we block out an hour for Rob Knapp. That's his hour. So it's not going to take an hour for the phone calls, but we give him an hour because when I come in, my in-person meeting can take as much as 50 minutes. So we give myself that time. So everybody gets an hour. Now, you can return calls in between. You can do whatever you want in between calls, but you'll have appointments on the hour. And that the advantage of that is everybody will do the same. Everybody will have appointments on the hour. So when you drop Rob Knapp's name into the scheduler, you'll put in there Tuesday at 9 o'clock, the first Tuesday of the month at 9 o'clock. That will populate the calendar for the whole year, first Tuesday. It'll also show four quarterly meetings and equally space out the two in-person meetings. So everything is equally spaced out, so you'll never have more than one appointment a day with 100 clients. You'll have two reviews, and they can be reviews of the portfolio, they can be reviews of the financial plan, but basically they're designed to give you more time with the client. So they may take 40 minutes twice a year. Okay.
That's a good concept. So one time you review the whole portfolio, and the other time you just spend it on the financial plan, see if it needs to be updated. Because think about it, we did the financial plans. You really don't go back to them unless they have a question. You know, you bring it up, say we're on target, but it's important to review them. Otherwise, why have it?
Right. No, it's wonderful. And then what we will do is we'll create what we call, because people say, well, what do I talk to these people about? We create what we call a 24-month calendar. And the 24-month calendar, 2 years. And the reason we do that is because we could create a 12-month calendar, but every item, not every item, but most items on there take more than 1 month to introduce and then to implement. So, for example, November, December, we'll have the topics will be required minimum distributions, completions, and tax selling, tax swapping, etc. And you'll do that for 2 months. But maybe March might be a review of a person's liabilities, right? The liability side of the balance sheet. So we'll go through all of their liabilities. And out of 100 clients that you introduce that topic to, you'll probably get 10 of them that need mortgages, either for themselves or their kids or somebody. And so we don't want to jam you up, so we give you 2 months on liability management, 1 month to introduce the topic, and then another month to follow up. So that would be on your agenda that you create for each client and send to them. So not only do we help you implement the financial planning process through our 12 scheduled appointments, we actually give you an agenda to help implement the things that you have, for one reason or another, not gotten to. So we might cover long-term care for 2 months. Just not that we're selling a lot of long-term care, we're simply educating a client on the planning process of preparing for long-term care and what insurance might be available for that. And then we might do beneficiary designations and make sure that we, you know, when you discover that somebody has got the wrong beneficiary, that's like a ticket to having them as a client forever. Because what you're doing is you're taking care of them on the incidental to small things that could turn into really big things because somebody missed it. And you, I mean, every time I introduce this, somebody says, oh yeah, I had a client that died. His first wife was the beneficiary of an insurance policy, and they never changed it. And so they had a big fight with the kids and everything. So, I mean, that's the last thing a human being wants, is to be remembered as a person that never took care of details, you know. So you take care of the details for them and make sure that beneficiaries are up to date on all things. And they'll thank you forever, never leave you, and to give you introductions. So is Supernova easy? No. Is our business easy? No. But doing it right really pays off. Okay? So I mean, that's what, you know, we've worked on this for years and years to try and come up with a process that's the most efficient, most helpful for you and for the client. Our mission is to improve the client experience worldwide by improving the FACA experience. So the whole thing is to make your life better and to make their life better. We've run out of time. We promise a half an hour, but sometimes we get into it too much and have to finish up a thought. So, questions? Okay, you know what the homework is?
Yep.
Okay, so you're going to do your forensic analysis of your practice, come up with identifying who are centers of influence inside those niches, if you have them, and then begin to notify clients that they're going to be reassigned or notify clients that they're going to have the good news. Now, we can work on folders next week if you want to, but we should get to the third week is about the organization of the team into roles and responsibilities. So take a look at the folders so you have more of have questions than me teaching you what's in the folder, okay? If you don't mind, that can be a big help to me. And also read the chapter. Chapter 3 is on roles and responsibilities. So read that and think about who should be in what roles and responsibilities. And for purposes of these calls, let's just deal with the people that we have now, okay, in the roles that they have, rather than, you know, saying someday or in the future. And because I just need to know how you're organized now with the people that you have now. I understand, and it's helpful for me to know that there is a future and that you have plans. But for my purposes of working with you, I need to know who you have on board right now. Okay?
Sounds good.
Good. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye.